SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
Welcome back to the Conference USA podcast on UnderdogDynasty.com, SB Nation's home for the Group of Five and FCS. Joe Londrigan, Eric Henry here with you as always, and we are mixing it up to preview week zero a little bit this week. We have a third wheel, so to speak, but we're super excited that he's here, and we're going to bring you a nice little tricycle of analysis for the Conference USA games this week. Our third is Adrian Broaddus. If you're a UTEP fan, you know him from 600 ESPN El Paso. He's the host of Minor Talk, and he's been on this show a couple times. So Adrian, thanks so much for coming back on, man.
Joe, Eric, it's great to come back with you guys, talk some Group of Five football. And to be honest with you guys, no one sheds a light on Conference USA football like Underdog Dynasty. So I love what you guys do. And I'm really happy to be a part of this. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, no worries. I mean, Eric, if people keep being nice to us, we're going to go off the deep end and become dark side. I don't know what else to say about that. People need to start being mean to me again. I miss it.
Don't worry, Joe. We have our faithful Conference USA listeners, at least for one more year of certain fans who like to give you a hard time. So I'm sure they will have no issues being mean to you, Joe.
Oh, that's true. That's very true. All right. Well, boys, let's dive into this first game. And it's one that's been anticipated by a lot of COSA fans, particularly in the state of Texas. It's North Texas heading to El Paso to face the UTEP Miners. You can find that one at 9 p.m. Eastern. So 7 p.m. El Paso time, I believe. Right. Are they Central or Mountain time?
That's right. It's Mountain time over here. And that's 7 o'clock kickoff. That's exactly right.
All right, 7 o'clock local time in El Paso, 9 o'clock Eastern on Stadium is where you can find that. And for all the gambling types out there, from our friends at DraftKings, looks like North Texas is -1 heading into that game, so you can check out those odds. But guys, let's start to dive into this. What do we think about, you know, UTEP fans are really excited for this. I think they had like less than 5,000 tickets sold last time I checked.
It's interesting.
Remaining. Or go ahead, Adrian. I'm sorry. You said 5,000 tickets sold. I just forgot to throw the quick note there, Joe.
Yes, less than 5,000 tickets remaining.
Well, yeah, that's been the talk of the town. I mean, the buzz and excitement about this team, this UTEP football team coming off a bowl appearance for the first time in 7 years last season. Getting back to a winning record was huge for Dana Dimmel, because I felt like the clock was kind of ticking. He arrived in 2018 and people were not happy with back-to-back seasons of winning just one game. Then they come up in the pandemic shortened season and they post 3 wins under their belt. And then it all culminates into last season, where they kind of had an amazing start. First off, not kind of, they did have an amazing start at 6-1, but they were beating opponents who were definitely lesser quality opponents, to put it nicely. And then they struggled on the latter part of the season. But I thought that, you know, the way that they showed up in that Fresno State game really showed how this team battled throughout the year and how they continue to fight even against the top opponents across the, you know, across the country. And I was pretty impressed just to see the way that UTEP turned up last year. And now it all comes to this season where expectations are a lot higher. Now the fan base is starting to come back. They're excited about this team. The tickets are selling like crazy. The problem is, guys, the UTEP often falls short when games are highly anticipated like this. Remember the UTSA game last year and how excited the UTEP fan base was when the Roadrunners were coming into town? They were ranked. And what happens with UTEP? They laid an egg in that game. They lost 44-23. They started off sluggish. I thought they looked tight to start things off. So if you're a UTEP fan, you're hoping that UTEP could start off a lot better this time around, knowing just how anticipated this game against North Texas really is.
Adrian, I'm going to kind of piggyback off of something you said there before I pass it back to Joe. You talked about the fact that the last few times that UTEP has had this type of, you know, kind of buzz around a game, unfortunately, they've laid an egg and kind of fallen short on the field. Just want to ask, what is the feeling there down the ground in El Paso as far as, you know, this year? Is it feel a little bit different, you know, given the fact that the past few times maybe, you know, things kind of came a little sudden by surprise as far as the, you know, the game and maybe the notoriety behind it, whereas you've had the whole offseason to kind of prep for this year.
Yeah, it's interesting because last year was kind of like the prove it year. Fans continue to say, well, you know, whatever, prove it. Prove it that you can make a bowl game. Prove that you can win more games, you know, post actually a winning record. And this year, the narrative has shifted to, well, our expectations are high. UTEP has not won a bowl game since 1967. So they're trying to break that streak this season. That really fuels a lot of the players on this team. And, you know, a lot of the players on this roster had a bad taste in their mouth with how the season ended, not just the bowl game losing at the New Mexico Bowl, but, you know, losing five of the last six games, especially in conference play. That was a huge thing that you heard all across the board when it comes to these players over the offseason. So they kind of feel like the players themselves feel like they want to redeem themselves from last year, and they're setting high expectations for themselves. And the fan base, they're setting high expectations for this UTEP football team. Remember, Dana Dimmel did receive a contract extension over the offseason, and it was met with pretty much, you know, understanding from the fan base. Everybody kind of got it, why he earned that two-year extension. But the interesting part about this is UTEP fans are fair weather. They will only support a winner, and as soon as this team starts to waver, they will definitely depart. So this one is a huge game for the Miners, trying to attract more attendance throughout the season. And if they lose this one against North Texas, I'd be worried about that New Mexico State game and the Boise State game as far as drawing a big crowd.
You mentioned kind of the players having that bad taste in their mouth. I'm curious what Coach Dimmel's mindset is. We got to hear from him a little bit at COSA Media Day, and it was a lot of X's and O's talk, but, you know, just from a mindset standpoint, I'm curious what he's thinking about maintaining that momentum that you talked about after last year.
It's interesting because Dana Dimmel is somebody who's very even keel. He has somebody who will not tell you how excited he is for a season or how worried he is for a season. His mind shift has really come where it's like now he's telling his players in the locker room, hey, you guys haven't won anything. You haven't necessarily done anything up to this point. The slate is wiped clean as far as he's concerned. So he is trying to urge his team to earn that kind of like that spotlight again from the fan base, or earn the recognition both league-wide and across the country, or at least through the group of fives. He wants his team to become a Kansas State. And that's a program that goes bowling year after year, that posts winning records year after year. Well, he was there with, previous head coach Bill Snyder. That was the mantra that they kind of maneuvered with over there at K-State. So now he's trying to bring that same mentality over at UTEP, and whether or not it will pan out, I think that's a big question, because historically speaking, when UTEP has a successful season, they come off that season right there. They typically have a down year. They regress right away. And you saw that in the offseason between 2014, when they won seven games under previous coach Sean Coogler. And then they went, you know, down the drain right after that. In 2015, they really couldn't. There was an argument that they could have made a bowl game that year, but they simply didn't. They posted a way less record than what they expected that season. And even look back to 2011. That's a year they also came off another bowl game in 2010 under Mike Price. And they fell short that following season as well. So sustaining success is that's the biggest, foundational piece for Dana Dimmel. And that's kind of how he's approaching this season.
Thanks, Adrian. For better or worse, there's a lot of pressure on both of these teams heading into this game. We've obviously talked a lot about the pressure on UTEP to kind of maintain the momentum that they've built based on last season. But then if you look at the North Texas side, it's a very similar feeling. You know, plenty of questions about, you know, that offensive backfield, particularly the quarterback position. However, the run game did look great at the end of last year, and really a lot of aspects of their team looked great at the end of last year. Obviously ended the regular season with six straight wins to get back to a bowl game. And I think their fan base is also kind of questioning, you know, whether or not they can, you know, keep themselves at that level of where they're at. So, you know, Eric, let's start with you. I guess I'm curious what your expectations are for North Texas heading into this game.
Yeah, surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, I guess coincidentally is probably a better word. North Texas is kind of in a similar situation as UTEP, in that they are looking to really prove themselves as a school that was selected to join the American Conference coming up, and also prove that last year wasn't a fluke. That was a team that started out 1-5 or 1-6, if my memory is serving correct, until they had that streak where, you know, it really coincided with the improvement of the defense, and they were able to rally off a few wins and qualify for a bowl contention. I think, you know, with that upset win of UTSA was really what did the trick for them there. So in my mind, this game is just as crucial for North Texas to come out and show that, you know, hey, they're a team that is on the rise. And specifically when you look at that schedule, Joe, with North Texas, I mean, after UTEP, they've got SMU, they've got Memphis. So they're going to face, and then you look at their conference schedule, they go to UTSA and to UAB. So this game may be just as crucial as far as for Seth Luttrell's club to kind of avoid another, you know, season in which they're coming down the stretch trying to make 5, 6, 7 wins and, you know, qualify for a bowl game. So definitely think it'll be interesting. And in terms of on the field, they've chosen to go with Austin Ani. So I think that kind of shows that they're very much in, you know, win now / win with what's proven. And that's going to be a heavy dose of the running game, a run game that rushed for over 3,000 yards last year, and to try to depend on some defensive stalwarts like KD Davis and others.
Adrian, what are your thoughts on how UTEP matches up with this North Texas team here?
Yeah, when I was doing my prep on North Texas, I was just floored with how many similarities North Texas has with the Miners. I just, you know, you look at the expectations that are around this group. That really reminds me of what UTEP's dealing with. They brought in Grant Gunnell from Arizona, and he's somebody who I thought was going to challenge Austin Ani for that quarterback spot. Maybe he still will as the season continues, but that quarterback situation is kind of like how fans view the UTEP quarterback situation, because while there is, I think, kind of national Gavin Hardison is kind of like that noteworthy quarterback at that spot. There were a lot of fans who wanted a open quarterback battle in the offseason between Gavin Hardison and somebody else. Not somebody else on the roster necessarily, but I just found that pretty interesting. I also think that North Texas relies on what they can do defensively with some of their smash mouth players like KD Davis. I would say KD Davis is to North Texas like Breon Hayward is to the Miners. The only difference is KD Davis is definitely playing on Saturday. We have no clue whether or not the former leading tackler for the Miners from last season will be playing or not when it comes to kickoff, on August 27th. So a lot of similarities all across the board. I feel like North Texas wants to, you know, go back to a bowl game this year. And if you look at their schedule, it's pretty heavy when it comes to their non-conference schedule with teams like Memphis and SMU. But there's an argument that their actual Conference USA schedule is a little bit more favorable, especially their games at home. So there is a path for them to try to get back to a bowl game. And I think that's exactly what this team wants.
Would definitely hope so if you're Seth Luttrell. And, you know, you mentioned kind of the paths that both these teams are on, very similar, and bowl games for both these squads are very attainable. So we'll see where the season takes them, but it's all going to start this week. Before we move on to some of the other games on the week zero slate, do want to note the matchups in the interior are really intriguing me. You know, we know how good Manasseh Mose is for North Texas at center. I think he's going to do a decent job of managing UTEP's interior line. However, as we all know, the edge rushers, the edge guys, Jadrian Traylor and Praise Amahule are really the big weapons for this UTEP defense. And I'm curious to see what happens with North Texas. Obviously, their tackles have a few more questions than their interior line. So I'm curious, you know, if Gavin Hardison, if Austin Ani is going to be able to combat that and get plays off quick enough to make a difference for his team.
I think that's a huge key, Joe. I really do. I think that when you're looking at the front six for the Miners, it's not, you know, you talk about Praise and Jadrian who are standout players for them, but I love their interior guys in Kelton Moss and Keenan Stewart. And if you look at any kind of advanced analytics, they will love those two defensive tackles for the Miners. And I also think beyond those four guys up front, you have a lot of depth behind them. And UTEP loves to switch in their edge rushers and give guys like Praise and Jadrian a rest during different possessions and stuff like that. So I would look at guys in the two deep, Maurice Westmoreland. I wouldn't be surprised to see him get a sack here in the early part of the season, along with guys like Daylon Williams. He's a strong defensive end as well for the Miners. So I like their depth also up front. And then when it comes to, you know, their line linebackers, I wouldn't be surprised to see them bring the heat and have Tyrese Knight try to, you know, rush Austin Ani in this game as well. So I think that that is going to be a great matchup. And you mentioned that front line for North Texas. I also really like Cole Brown, who's also coming back for their team and who can really provide a lot of depth for them up front. So this is going to be a real interesting battle. And yeah, I'm curious to see how Austin Ani, how much pressure Austin Ani gets throughout the game.
Eric, any thoughts about those linemen that we mentioned?
You know, in my mind, and I won't belabor this too much because we do have some other games we want to get to, but in my mind, that is not only is it a pivotal matchup, it is the pivotal matchup because I have Praise Amuhule as our listeners and readers know is my number one player in Conference USA returning entering this year. And, you know, Adrian talked about the depth on that defensive line, but in specificity, what I think, or at least what I, you know, I feel like it's a fair estimate as far as what North Texas is going to do is they're going to run the football. That's not to say that, you know, they don't have some playmakers on the outside, Roger Burns and others, but it's just fair to think given the strength of this football team last year and, you know, kind of, again, this is not, I don't think there's anything, you know, a negative with calling Austin Ani a game manager, but at this point in time, you kind of know he is what he is. He's a guy who's not going to win it for you, not going to lose it for you. They're going to depend on that run game and, you know, hoping that guys like Katie Davis and others can make some plays. So it is going to be crucial that they can pound the rock and make some plays because, as Adrian talked about, you know, obviously the status of Breon Hayward is still in question, but you got a guy like Tyrese Knight and others. That front seven, I think right now you have to think advantage UTEP. So it's going to be crucial to see how North Texas can kind of, you know, establish that run game and keep the ball on the ground and keep the clock moving.
All right. With that, let's jump into let's talk about some Western Kentucky. I know they're the first game for all of the G5 coming up on Saturday at noon Eastern on CBS Sports Network in Bowling Green there. And frankly, this is a game where I don't think Western is going to have too much issue getting the victory. That being said, as Eric likes to tease me frequently, they have had issues with FCS opponents in the past. We've talked about that Central Arkansas game from a few years ago. They obviously lost to Maine at home during the Mike Sanford era. That being said, after watching some of the practice tape that some of the guys from like the Bowling Green Daily News and stuff like that have posted of Austin Reed, who recently won that QB1 battle over Jarrett Dagey, who's now at Troy, I love the way this guy moves. I think his deep ball is fascinating. And if guys like Daywood Davis and really just the rest of that receiving core can find ways to get open downfield, I think they're going to have they're going to have enough big plays to score more points. And frequently frankly, that's what's important here. That being said, Austin Peay does have some interesting pieces. But, you know, Eric, we'll start with you. What are you expecting to see from the tops in this one?
Yeah, Joe, the big thing I'm really looking for is, A, how will Austin Reed perform? It's not necessarily that this is going to be a bigger stage for him. You know, granted, going from Division II to FBS, in theory, the level of competition is going to be better. But, you know, I don't necessarily think it's going to be something he can't handle. But just as far as adjusting this offense, Joe, if you remember, in the early part of last year, there was a little bit of adjustment process for Bailey Zappe. Now, of course, that sounds somewhat bizarre to say, given the fact that he ended up breaking multiple school records and, of course, you know, national passing records. But it did take a little bit of time for Bailey Zappe to kind of set in and for that offense to kind of set in and find their groove, right? So keep an eye on that. Number two, defensively, they're replacing Beanie Bishop, replacing D'Angelo Malone, replacing, you know, a litany of players. And on that offensive line as well, guys who've transferred to the Power Five. So how are those new guys going to fare in, you know, different roles? Guys like Quantavius Leslie is definitely one of the top returning offensive linemen in Conference USA. He's going to be the leader amongst the pack, as opposed to a guy who was really stepping in and trying to finding his way last year. Last but not least, I'm curious to see, Joe, is the run game going to be more pronounced this year? And now, of course, in last year with the offense, you know, kind of those quick bubble screens that you saw to Jarrett Stern serve as an extension of the run game, right? But are we going to see a little bit more, maybe Jakari Moses and others, in terms of establishing that run game? So I do think it'll be interesting. Scotty Walden obviously has experience coaching in Conference USA, the former interim Southern Miss head coach for a handful of games, I believe 2 years ago before he took over at Austin Peay. So do think it'll be interesting. But all in all, I think this is a game that Western Kentucky should, just in terms of sheer talent and playmakers, should pull away in the second half.
For sure. There's a reason why none of the sports books have even set lines for this game. But, you know, Adrian, I know you're going to be glued to that TV when UTEP comes on. But what are you expecting to see in this early game between the tops and the Governors?
Yeah, it's interesting because the Governors, who had a winning season last year, they have lost their last FBS games by a good margin. So I do expect Western Kentucky to roll on this one, but I am curious to see what they're going to bring offensively. And then defensively with this group, it's really interesting you talk about what happened last year, Eric, because, you know, Coach Helton, I think they had a pretty tough stretch last year where their offense just didn't produce as much, where their defense would then have to be in tough situations. Like last year, they allowed 436 yards per game, and you look at the guys who are coming back this year. I like their linebackers. I think their secondary is a little bit better this year, but you just look at their schedule as a whole. This Western Kentucky team has a tough road ahead of them, and I'm curious to see how they'll manage against a couple different Power Five teams that they have to play this year in Auburn and Indiana, and then also, you know, you have games like UAB at home and then UTSA on the road. Just a real interesting schedule all in all for the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, but I feel like they'll have a lot of success this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, as you both pointed out, obviously starting the season strong has been a little bit of an issue for for Western Kentucky the last couple of years. So given the strength of the rest of their schedule that you pointed out, Adrian, I am hoping that they just get in that mindset of playing, you know, as mistake-free football as you can get. and it took a little while for them to get rolling last year. And while obviously you can't dwell on mistakes, they're going to make them. You have to be able to get yourself in that position where you're limiting them and getting in those habits for when you play much, much tougher opponents down the road. And I mentioned that there's no gambling information for this game just yet, which should show you how high the expectations are for a Western Kentucky win here. But to play, to get to the last game on the COSA schedule in week zero here, we have Florida Atlantic hosting Charlotte. And Florida Atlantic actually favored -7, 7.5, depending on where you go. Looks like -7 on DraftKings. But, you know, we've talked to both Will Healy and Willie Taggart very recently, Eric, and both these guys seem like they have their teams in spots where they're not looking ahead to the rest of the schedule. They are just focused on starting this season with a win. And I like that approach. And I'm curious to see who is going to come out on top here, given the matchups that we've talked about ad nauseum the last couple of weeks.
Joe, this is the game that I, you know, selfishly I'm looking forward to the most. That's no slight on the UTEP-UNT game, but I at least feel, you know, if for either of those teams, if they lose, while, as Adrian talked about, especially UTEP, it's a little bit depressing in terms of the atmosphere on the ground. I don't think it's going to break their season. And I think it's the same, you say, maybe a little less so for North Texas, but I don't think it sends fans into panic mode. I think for Charlotte and FAU, these are programs in really, really unique spots. And I'm definitely going to be curious to hear Adrian's thoughts on this as well, someone who covers Conference USA. When you look at Charlotte, we all know what happened a couple of years ago when they made the bowl game, but people tend to forget that that was a team that did struggle. I remember when that team came to FIU and they lost something like 48-23. And there was a quote in the Charlotte Observer from Will Healy where he was saying, man, you know, maybe I got a little ahead of myself as far as thinking, you know, how quickly I could get things turned around. And then lo and behold, the team ends up finding its groove. Alex Highsmith breaks out. Vic Tucker breaks out. Chris Reynolds, you know, breaks out as well. And they end up winning, I believe it was 5 of their last 6 to qualify for a bowl game. And then you look at FAU and Willie Taggart. Regular listeners of this podcast know that I am a fan of Willie Taggart. I think he's an excellent football coach. He's a football coach who doesn't get as much credit as he deserves for turning around certain programs. They just tend to look at the fact that he left Oregon after 1 year and then Florida State, which, as it's seen with Mike Norvell, is certainly far than just one coach is the issue there in Tallahassee, as far as that's concerned. But the fact of the matter is, it has been 2 years since FAU was qualified for a bowl game. Two years since they've had a winning record. And the fact of the matter is, the program just really hasn't been where it's at since Lane Kiffin left. And listen, part of that is because, not to say that Lane Kiffin left the cupboard bare, but it was a much different FAU team that Lane Kiffin had in terms of the, you know, the talent on the field and the one that Willie Taggart took over. You know, there were some holes at certain positions. They did lose a Chris Robinson at quarterback, right? That's another thing people forget. That feels like a blast from the past, but Chris Robinson was one of the better quarterbacks in Conference USA during his tenure. So they had to figure out the quarterback position. They had to figure out certain things defensively. And I think the additions of a lot of veteran coaches are going to make a difference. But again, bringing back to my initial point, for FAU fans on the ground, I can tell you this much. In Boca, they're expecting a win. And I know Charlotte fans are certainly wanting to win to kind of get things back where they were as far as a couple of years ago. So it's going to be really interesting. I think this one will come down to really, you know, the stars, the playmakers on the field for FAU and Nikosi Perry. We just saw that. Maybe surprisingly, Joe, Johnny Ford is not the RB1, although Willie Taggart said that he will see plenty of time. It is Larry McCammon, the former three-star recruit out of Hoover, Alabama. But then you look on the defensive side, guys like Evan Anderson, guys like TJ Young. Willie Taggart's been very high on Smoke Mungin, Romaine Mungin at cornerback as well. So it's going to come down to those guys for FAU. And of course, for Charlotte, it's going to be their stars offensively. Chris Reynolds, Vic Tucker, Grant DeBose, and don't forget that third receiver, Elijah Spencer, as well. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But in my mind, I still lean towards FAU. I don't know about it as a 7-point favorite, but I just think there are too many questions as far as Charlotte defensively to have it all figured out by week zero.
Adrian, your thoughts on this Charlotte-FAU matchup?
Yeah, over the past 7 years that I've covered the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, which is played here in El Paso, there have been two coaches that have really stood out to me. Number one is Coach Shaw of Stanford. I think that's pretty obvious, right? I mean, if you get him in a room and you get to hear from him, you really understand how much he knows about football and just what a brilliant man he really is. But my second most impressive coach that I got to interact with was Willie Taggart. And, I mean, when he was taking over as an interim for Florida State, just the way he handled things over there, I was just so impressed with him overall. And I think that, you know, as soon as Florida Atlantic made that hire, I just thought it was a going to be a slam dunk. I mean, they really got a great one in Willie Taggart. And I've really liked Nikosi Perry throughout the years at quarterback, but I agree. Can we all agree that we like these Conference USA openers in week zero? Because, I mean, how entertaining is it to watch the Owls and the 49ers, which on Charlotte's side, you look at Will Healy, he's trying to build things over there. Chris Reynolds has been around at this conference for a while now, and he's trying to really show what he can do in this league and take it to another level, get back to winning ways, and get back to a bowl game. And on the flip side with FAU, the time is now. The Owls want to win this year. So I'm going to side with you, Eric. I think FAU squeezes this one out. When it comes to their home openers under Willie Taggart, they are 2-0. And then on the flip side with the 49ers, they've lost their last six road openers that they've had, throughout their football program in recent years. So I'm still siding with the Owls, although I think this is going to be a really fun matchup to watch.
It is. It really is, I think. And to play devil's advocate and talk about Charlotte a little bit, they've played really well on CBS Sports Network over the last couple of years. That being said, their one loss on CBS Sports Network last year was against FAU, where they lost 38-9. So I'm interested to see what this offensive line can do to kind of limit the disruption that Evan Anderson's inevitably going to cause. And of course, we all know that rush defense last year was an issue. It was a big issue. So how are they going to come into this game? How have they improved? And, you know, do they kind of come out with that same sense of urgency that we saw at the beginning of last season, but didn't really maintain throughout the year? But you know, I understand why everybody's picking FAU, and it's tough to argue, but based on how hungry this Charlotte team seems to be, I would not be surprised if this one came down to the last, like, quarter of play, if that makes sense. All right, as we get into week zero, I know it's been a long off season, so thank you all once again for sticking with us and learning more about COSA as we go. If you want to follow Adrian on Twitter, highly recommend you do that. It's just Adrian brought us, and you can catch him on 600 ESPN El Paso. Adrian, before we go, any work of yours that you want to plug, anything that you want folks to check out as we get into football season here?
Yeah, just check out 600ESPNElPaso.com. We'll have all the pregame content ahead of time for this game against North Texas. We already got some articles up on the website right now. But I would say just check that website out. You could even listen to our daily show Sports Talk there. And it airs 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern time, 4 p.m. to 7 over here in El Paso.
Fantastic. And if you want to follow us, I'm at JOEHIO underscore. Eric is at Eric C. Henry underscore. And of course, at Underdog Dynasty for more G5 football updates every single day. All right. Happy football watching, everybody. We'll talk to you again very, very soon.